Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you, intern Nick as well, on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Lots to get into today. We've talked about Rick Barnes and the Vols going down. Big trade for the Titans over the weekend as well. They find their tight end in Austin Hooper as well in free agency. We'll get back into all that throughout the rest of the show, throughout the rest of the hour here today on Robbie and Rex Road. It is NHL trade deadline day as well, Joe Rex Road, and the Predators have already made a move. They trade a second-round pick for Jeremy Lauzon from the Seattle Kraken. He was, I think, originally with Boston, ends up in Seattle last year in the expansion draft, and he has been a player this year for the Kraken that has, you know, played on their back end, played kind of in third-pairing minutes, which would be, I think, ideally where he slots in here with the Predators on their third pair. Whether that be now when they've got some guys missing on the third pair, I'm interested to see, like, when Borowiecki and Benning come back, how he slots in. But 53 games this year for the Kraken. He's got one goal, five assists, 6 points. So, I mean, he's not an offensive guy that they're bringing in. He's 24 years old. He'll be 25 here in just a few weeks. Honestly, the numbers analytically are not great. But this is also a move where if you're the Predators, he is a restricted free agent after this year, which means he will be under team control. So not necessarily a rental player. I got to say, though, I was floored when they gave up a second-round pick for this. Like, I think a second-round pick is way too expensive for a guy like this. That's just me.
I was – because, you know, this initially came across – I think Pierre got this first.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of times in those situations there are no terms. So as soon as he tweeted this, I'm like, oh, okay, makes sense. Then you see the second-round pick. I'm like, what? Second-round pick? I mean, to me, if that's the case, then are you intending – of course, this is a guy who, you know, he went 52nd overall to the Bruins. You know, this guy who has been viewed as a top-four guy in the past. Does this mean that that's the intent moving forward with him? Because I just don't understand a second-round pick for a third-pairing guy who, and you said this off-air earlier, you know, Borowiecki and Benning both on IR, I still think that's your ideal third pairing this year.
I agree.
If you can get those guys healthy, maybe this also has a commentary on that to some extent, but that's a pricey acquisition.
It's pricey. I'm honestly kind of surprised that David Poile did this and got into this mix. Now, again, I mean, I would assume – the counter argument back to that will be, well, this is not just a rental. Like, this is somebody that obviously they like, and that with being an RFA, he could be here for years to come at this point. So, but honestly, like, his play on the ice, I mean, he's been okay, but he's not been all that great. So if you're viewing him as more than third pair guy, which I don't know if the Predators are or not, but the price is pretty steep for a third pair guy. I don't like the second round pick that you're giving up here.
If he's a third pairing, the word is eluding me. Mainstay. How about that?
There you go.
Third pairing, consistent presence over several years. Is that worth a second round pick?
You can find third pairing defensemen, man.
Like, I mean, like a really good one?
Really good one, then maybe?
I mean, maybe. That's the thing. It's so – like, how many teams have really good third-pairing defensemen? I mean, they're you know.
Tampa.
Yeah, there you go.
Honestly, like the Predators this year when
– they've been good,
like,
yeah.
When Borowiecki and Benning have been healthy, they've been good. I mean, the numbers bear that out. They've been good. I get it, and I've talked about this, and, you know, I can't speak out of both sides of my mouth here. I've been talking about how they need to go get – a veteran defenseman, because right. You're not going to stay healthy down the stretch. I don't know that I anticipated them giving up a second-round pick in order to do so.
I mean, even just a third-round pick would sit better.
Yeah.
And that's still a, you know, a good pick. I mean, also, this this to me, if there was any question, and I don't think there was, but if there's any question, like if anyone actually thinks that like Philip Forsberg could be traded today, I think this would end that, would it not? I'm going to 100 now. I was at 99.
You're going 100%?
Yeah, I was at 99.9 whatever percent that they weren't trading him. I'm at 100 now with this acquisition. Like imagine giving up a second round pick for Jeremy Lozon and then trading Philip Forsberg.
Oh boy.
Like that would actually be possibly the worst day ever for a GM in the NHL. Like you can't do that. There's zero chance that Philip Forsberg is going to be, in case anyone out there still is hoping, like, oh my gosh, they're not going to sign him and they're going to lose him for nothing. Well, they're not trading Philip Forsberg.
Well, by the way, Forsberg becomes the all-time franchise-leading goal scorer on a Saturday night. He gets his 211th career goal, puts the Predators up 4-2 in that game. They end up winning 6-3 in that game against Toronto. I thought an impressive game, impressive performance for them on Saturday night. I will say, when this team has a clunker, usually they respond pretty well. They had a clunker against Seattle. They destroyed San Jose the next game. Had a clunker against Philly last week. They played really well on Saturday against a very good Toronto Maple Leafs team, particularly a very good offensive Toronto Maple Leafs team. UC Saros was awesome. I know he gave up three. He's pretty darn good in that game. So, impressive performance for the Predators. You're in a good spot right now in the standings. To me, like, yes, based on the way that Forsberg is playing, it's probably good enough by itself. But with where you are in the standings after that win, and just how important he is right now, like they're, I would be blown away if they traded him today. Now, look, maybe they get an offer that is just insane, and maybe that changes the way Poyle views this, but I would be blown away if they traded Forsberg today. I don't think there's any way that's happening.
I think he could be offered half a roster of any team in the league. He wouldn't trade him.
I think so. There may be something to that. And then the question is, okay, well, that's fine. Does that mean a deal is going to get done today? I don't know. If you follow some of the reporting that's been out there about this, I wouldn't say it looks very likely that a deal gets done today. I mean, Darren Dreger has been reporting on this. You know, Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period has reported on this over the weekend about how, I think the word he used was talks are, quote, not close at the moment. But both parties want this thing to work out. So it's looking like to me, and we'll see what happens today. There's plenty of time. I know it's the day of the trading deadline, but things can change in a hurry on a day like today when there's desperation that kicks in. So I'm not saying there's no chance that Forsberg's going to be signed today, but I would say at this moment, Joe Rexroad, the most likely scenario to me is he's not signed by today. And he's also still a member of the Nashville Predators, which I know is going to make a portion of this fan base very, very nervous as they move forward.
Yeah, but again, I mean, this is where, you know, I think that like fandom can sort of be sorted out here. I mean, if you're a Predators fan who's been paying close attention, you can't be surprised right now if that's the scenario. And I agree with you. I think that's the most likely scenario. You have to. Like, you cannot, and I understand you can say you cannot lose him for nothing. Well, I hear you. But the way things are and the place this team is, you cannot look in that locker room and say, sorry, guys, number nine's out of here. You can't do it. I don't know if they're going to make a run, but I don't know that they're not going to make a run. And this is the best year the Preds have ever had for top level forward production. Am I right? Am I right about that?
Yeah.
You got to roll with that. And I still think ultimately they're going to get a deal done with Forsberg. I just desperately need to know these numbers that they're reportedly so far apart on. Like, I just don't understand how 8 times 9 can't work.
Well, I don't understand it either. It was interesting because I was talking to Darren about this over the weekend. With Friedman coming on last week, with Hurdle signing his contract in San Jose, you know, it sounds like, from what Darren was telling me, maybe that Friedman said that the Predators are going to have to get out of the $7 million range with Forsberg, like in the sevens, and maybe get into the eights. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, they're not in the eights? That would explain to me why there's no contract yet at this point.
Yeah,
I'm feeling good about my 8 for 8.5. I really am. The more time goes by, I'm feeling that may be the landing spot.
I mean, again, if they – so we have to go to break. We can talk more about this after this. But if he can get 7 years max, you know, is he going to get 10? Is someone going to give him 10 a year?
I severely doubt it.
I doubt that too. Someone going to give him 9? I could see that. I could see that. So if you're the Preds, if you're the Preds, you can say, okay, we'll give you 8, and that's 64. And 9 is 63. So that's one more $1 million that we will give you than any other team was going to give you. But why not just go to 8.5 then?
Yeah.
I think it's going to get done. But if they're that low, then, I mean, Poyle's really looking for a team-friendly deal.
What are your thoughts on the Predators as NHL trade deadline day is today? 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, I do believe our catfish here down in the tank is pregnant. Did I hear that right?
I have heard that myself.
So we might have, I don't know how many fish do catfish have, if the catfish could catfish.
Great question. We will try to discover that for you all later as the puck is tipped into the zone by Tanner Janot.
Pete Weber and Hal Gill breaking it down like they always do. How many catfish do they have when they're pregnant? I've never watched this thing happen.
I don't know. Never thought about that.
One of many questions that need to be answered today on NHL trade deadline day here on Robbie and Rex Road. Preds have already made one move. They acquire a defenseman for a second-round pick. Jeremy Lauzon coming in today from the Seattle Kraken. We'll see where he slots into the lineup, if he slots into the lineup when all defensemen are healthy. That's a heck of a price to give up for Jeremy Lauzon, but we'll see what happens on that front. Now the big question is, are there other moves that the Predators make today, and will Philip Forsberg be a part of it? You and I have both thrown it out there. I would be, at this point, I think, floored if Philip Forsberg got traded today. Now the question is, will he be re-signed today? And if he's not, how nervous does that make you if you're a Predators fan? Wes, texting in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Do you guys think if Forsberg is not traded today, that he doesn't re-sign? Poyle loses his threat of a trade if nothing is done today. Then Forsberg holds all the leverage. This is coming from Wes on the text line.
How much do you think a threat of a trade has entered into this whole thing? I mean, it's there. It's obviously possible and no longer possible.
I don't think it's a huge factor.
I don't either.
I do think if you're David Poyle and you don't trade him today, I do think you need to feel pretty good about your chances of re-signing him. Like, I know they're in the playoff mix. But, like, if you don't trade him and you, in your heart of hearts, know that you think that you're not going to re-sign him, I don't know if that's the right move if you're David Poyle. Now, again, based on...
It's still going to happen, though.
It is. Based on the conversations that I've had, based on some reporting that's been done around this, there's no sense to me that I've picked up that Forsberg doesn't want to be here. Like, That part of it has not entered into the discussion. Matter of fact, I've kind of heard the opposite. Like, I've kind of heard he does. Like, this is where he wants to be. But the money has to work out. Like, I hear this all the time. Well, if he wants to be here, it'll get done. Yeah, probably it'll get done. But you still have to be close on the money. Like, he's not taking $2 million less here than he would somewhere else.
No. No. Look, like if David Poyle's saying 8 for 7, if I'm Forsberg, what? Yeah. No. And I understand, I mean, all Preds fans who say, boy, the last few years of this deal are going to hurt. I mean, I agree. Also, you can say, okay, so you got Forsberg for 8 plus 8 or 9. You got Johansson. You got Duchesne. You got Yossi. What do you have to show for it? But, again, he is the best forward you've had. He is still in his prime. And, you've got to pay the guy. You got to pay the guy more than 8, right?
Yes. I think.
I don't, like, I feel like.
If I'm Forsberg's agent, there's no way that I've been asking for anywhere near the same amount that Johansson and Duchesne are making. Like, I'm asking for more.
The weird thing about this is you've got so, like you said, and who was that again? Talking about the sevens,
Friedman.
So Elliot Friedman's talking about being in the sevens, but Friedman has also reported, like, the, you know, he's not going to get paid more than Yossi.
Yeah,
you know, and I've seen some arguments there, like, well, he should get paid more than Yossi,
which I don't think he should.
I don't know about that. Okay, but there's a big gap between these two things.
Yeah,
there's a big gap between, you know, him and Yossi. Does he have to be over that? And, like, can you get him into eight? Look, he should make. Yeah, I mean, I think if you get into the whole thing, and I don't know, agents are going to do this. Of course they are, because they are trying to get the most money they can for their clients. But if you get into this whole thing, well, this guy on your team makes this, so he must make this. Well, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. No. Okay. So sometimes a deal that was made prior, it can't mean that much in a negotiation. But, I mean, eight to me has got to be the baseline.
Well,
the
things I look at are more about what are the deals around the league right now for similar players, right? So Landeskog, I mean, he made seven. So he's making seven a year. Hurdle makes eight. So the Hurdle deal just happened last week. He's making $8 million. Which is why I feel pretty good about my 8.5, because I think Forsberg is better than Hurdle, and I think 8.5 may be in where it ends up. But that's what you pay attention to me more than anything else. All right, who are comparable players around the league, and what have they made recently? Like, what are the recent contracts suggest? Because I've heard people throw out the Jeff Skinner contract and all these things. All that's fine. That was before the pandemic, and it was before the money situation is right. What it
before
is
before the cap stagnated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a totally different discussion now. So I look at the Landeskog deal. I look at the Hurdle deal. You know, I think the cap eventually is going to go back up. So you got to forecast that as well. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. I think somewhere in the $8 million. I think he's going to end up 8.5. I don't think it's going to happen today, though. I could be wrong. I have no information on that. I don't think he's going to be signed by the end of the day.
I mean, Poyle has got to be at 8. You got to start at 8, okay? And Forsberg and J.P. Barry need to look at 9 and then go down from there.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the window. That's the fair window on both sides. And it's really not that – that should not be that big of a gap.
I wouldn't think so.
And if the no-movement situation is figured out, and it's absolutely an 8-year term – then this should not be that difficult. I mean, do we need to get in there?
Send me in there. Do we get a cut?
It'd be amazing if we could get to the point in sports where, like, some of this could be, why can't we get some of this televised?
Yeah,
you know?
Live stream.
I mean, we have all these, you know, we got Hard Knocks and all, you know, the NHL, the Showtime show. Why can't we get some, like, negotiations? I mean, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
I would tune in.
For sure. Frank on the text line says, it's not just the players, but how can Poyle look at Hines if he trades Forsberg?
Yes.
I think Philip Forsberg just wants under Yossi money, but also a no-movement clause. That's where Poyle is holding out, but this deal isn't getting done until after the season. Now, we don't know what's going on in terms of the no-movement clause, because honestly, like, some of the reporting that's been done around this, they have not mentioned a no-movement clause one time. It's been about the number.
Well, Poyle on Darren Dunican Chase last week said, he said it's the number.
Yeah.
So, I mean, based on what he said to them, I don't think no movement is a thing here. I think that must be agreed upon, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Whether that's a no movement or not one.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why he would say that if it was actually the no movement clause, it's a sticking point. And, yes, good point on Hines, too. Everyone. You know, it is easy for all of us to sit back here and say, yeah, I don't know if they're going to make a run. The Avs look so good, and, you know, whenever they play a bad game, then it comes back up again. How is this team going to make a run? Well, this team could make a run. They could, and they certainly won't if they don't have Forsberg. And you put all that they've put into this year and overachieve relative to expectations and play like a team that could be a real handful in the playoffs, you can't. I believe you can't rip that away. I understand the risk, But I think what you said was very key there, and I believe it too. I think Forsberg wants to be here. Maybe that wobbled a little bit when they traded away Arvidsson. He was unhappy about it and thinking, where's this team going?
Yep.
But now, I think it's pretty clear, and that's got to inform your decision too.
Well, and I know there are still Predators fans that believe that if they haven't signed him by the deadline today, you got to trade him. Like, you're not doing your job if you don't trade him. I don't think that's going to happen. But I am interested. Like, if they get through the day and he's still a member of this team and the contract hasn't been signed, I wonder what the reaction will be from Preds fans. I think majority will be like, all right, well, better get him signed by the time free agency comes around. But I do think there will be some freak out that takes place today if he's not under contract.
The mindset of him and the team going into the playoffs, and again, it's not like they've clinched the playoffs, by the way, but I think they're going to get in there. But does it matter to have a deal done before the playoffs?
I don't think from the players' perspective it really does. I think they say this all the time, and it's cliche, but I think it's actually true. Like, I think they are just so in the moment right now that they're not thinking about it that much. Conversely, like, if you traded him right now, like, yeah, I think it would gut this team. Number one, obviously you miss him on the ice, but I think just morale-wise, like, if you traded him right now, they would be devastated.
Oh, for sure. I'm just wondering, maybe even for him especially, to just have this put away by the playoffs. Would it help him perform
better? I can tell you he's done. He's annoyed talking about it. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Saturday night, he was not really much into the discussion of this. Which, I get it, but
yeah,
it's going to be there, buddy, till the contract's signed.
Exactly. So there's one reason right there. I mean, if you put that away, and then it's, okay, you're going to be here. It's over. Focus on the playoffs versus, oh, my God, I'm going to be asked about this again, even though it's a huge game four coming up. I think that might matter.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. A gigantic weekend in the world of sports. The Vols out of the NCAA tournament. Big trade from the Titans, and it is NHL trade deadline day. We'll take your thoughts on all of it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
When you look at this team, have you been concerned about the lack of just a reliable post-scoring all season?
Yes. I mean, because I think in college you've got to have somebody, and regardless of size, you've got to have somebody that can go in when you have days like this, when you can't seem to find the bottom of the bucket. You've got to be able to throw it in there and get fouled, put pressure on people. But I'm also proud of the way, today, again, at times we had a lot of freshmen out there, and new experience for, I think we only had three guys who have been in an NCAA game, but Jonas, Brandon, those guys have grown up. Urosh has gotten better. Folke's been with us a long time. But, I think at the collegiate level, you've got to have some presence around the rim, and we haven't been able to do that consistently. And as you said, it came mostly from our guards.
That was Rick Barnes over the weekend after a 76-68 loss for the Vols against Michigan in round two of the NCAA tournament. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Joe, tough loss for the Vols this weekend. We got a lot to get into here in this segment. Busy weekend here in the world of sports. But, man, that was a gut punch to Tennessee fans on Saturday against Michigan. They shot 2 of 18 from 3, and we had a texter point this out on the text line earlier. It's not all about making the three-point shot, and there are other reasons you lose the game. But when you dry up for as long of a stretch as they did offensively, it's just tough to overcome that, and the Vols could not overcome it. And here we are yet again, having a discussion about a Rick Barnes coach team out early in the NCAA tournament. So that narrative still ongoing for the Vols.
Yeah, and again, totally fair. I mean, it's a huge sample size of information. Rick Barnes 25-26 in the NCAA tournament and has been past the first weekend once since 2008, and that means something. I don't know specifically what it means about what he does, but it means something. And I just think that this particular, again, it's very different from last year to me when you look at the aftermath and the even the reaction. Because last year's team was very frustrating, and then it was like, I think most people, myself included, thought Oregon State was fraudulent. Yeah, they made a run through a bad Pac-12, we thought, tournament. But then, of course, they go on a run. But it's still it's a bad team. This team, it's going to be tough to get this exact mix. It's just hard. It's hard to get it perfect, and it wasn't perfect. Like if you could have Huntley Hatfield a year later,
yep,
you know, or whatever, you could have, you know, even like a Justin Powell stronger, because I still think he could end up being, you know, something for Tennessee moving forward. But to have Kenny Chandler and to have, you know, Vescovy and James as juniors and enough depth inside, this team had the pieces to make a run. This is far from the only team sitting around this week watching basketball that could have made a run. It happens every year. But this was such a great opportunity. And Michigan should not have gotten – I don't blame Michigan for what they did. I mean, Juwan Howard sitting there watching Kenny Chandler get to the rim over and over again. They had to adjust. But Michigan should not have gotten away with what it did defensively. And when the Vols had that six-point lead down the stretch, they just missed good shot after good shot. And if you get good shots, I mean, it's still a make-or-miss game.
Yep.
They hit none of them. And if you want to blame Rick Barnes for that, you can. I mean, again, the larger picture is not good. In this particular game, I think that the Vols, I think everything they did schematically made sense and personnel-wise made sense. They should not have gone big, no. But they blew it, man. They blew
it. They did. There's no question about it. Brandy on the text line says, the Vols pump everybody up and make them think it's actually possible, then crash and burn, breaking hearts around the state. Sounds about right. It's coming from Brandy on the text line.
I did see – I had some Vols fans, you know, comment on my column about Rick Barnes, you know, that they still have a better feeling because they won the SEC tournament, which is interesting. And, I mean, it's fair. And they that was a good achievement. I mean, they haven't done that since 1979. But to me, that's also another example of, like, why – because there's going to be a lot of also like, this is all fake. They never had a chance. You guys got suckered in and everything. And no, it's – if you watch this team all year, no, they were good enough. They were good enough. And they had those offensive lulls in a lot of wins even.
Yep.
That you wondered, when is that going to get you? But when it gets you at the end of a game like that that's so important, man, that's just – that's heartbreaking for Tennessee and for Tennessee fans. I would not look at that and say, it was all a fraudulent team. No, it was a team that could have made the Final Four.
Titans trade for Robert Woods over the weekend. A 2023 sixth-round pick in exchange for Robert Woods from the LA Rams. It's a big move, Joe Rexroad. If Robert Woods can be healthy and he recovers from the torn ACL, he's 29 years old. He's been very productive in LA the last few years out there. Obviously, they're going through salary cap issues and making decisions out there, and they brought in Allen Robinson. So there's a lot that's happening out in L.A. that caused this move to be made. But if he's healthy, this could be a move that potentially works out really, really well for John Robinson and the Titans. Your thoughts on Robert Woods coming to the Titans?
I mean, I think it's a great price. Sixth-round pick and 23 for Woods. He is still young. He's productive. ACL. Fit right in to the player acquisition tradition of the Titans. But seriously, I think it's a value, obviously, that is partially related to that. You know, the Rams moved on. He's been a really good player. I've liked Robert Woods for a while, and I think he'll fit in here really well. It's interesting that they brought in a former Rams receiver last year that didn't fit in at all. I think Robert Woods will fit in perfectly. So I have a fair amount of certainty that Robert Woods will be a quality number two receiver. They still need to get more to me. They need to get a speed guy still. He's a good, solid, physical receiver. They need a speed guy. And then Hooper is it's good. He's a number one tight end. He's a number one tight end quality player. Will he be a good number one tight end here? I don't know. But I like that move too.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that one works out. Like, I agree with what you said earlier. I think if Woods is healthy, and that's a big if with anybody in the National Football League, is being healthy. But if he's healthy, I think there's a fair degree of certainty based on what he's been throughout his career and his age. Like, it's not like he's 35 years old. He's 29. Like, I think you know pretty much what you're getting there. Hooper, I don't really know. Like, Hooper, it looked like when he was in Atlanta, he was on his way to becoming, I'm not going to say Travis Kelce or George Kittle or anything like that, but he was on his way to becoming an upper echelon tight end in the league. And it just really hasn't been that good in Cleveland the last couple of years. Now, how much of that is Cleveland and Baker Mayfield and the situation that he was in, and how much of that is him as a player? I know he had injuries in 2020. He was in 16-17 last year, so injuries weren't much of a problem. Can he be more productive than 345 yards? I guess we'll find out moving forward.
Yeah, and can he be what they need him to be in the run game and just be the all-around player that they sign up for? If so, it's going to be a really nice value for them. I don't think they were ever going to get into the mix for the top guys. Of the mid-level guys, this is probably close to the top of the mid-level in terms of past performance and I think potential. And so much of this is just how motivated he is to kind of reset, redefine himself after the 2 years in Cleveland.
Got a texture that says Robert Woods equals Super Bowl, LOL.
It's a team sport. 1 of 53. Pretty good, though. Better. They're better. You know, it's not going to be like making the rest of the AFC tremble. The AFC, eight Hall of Fame quarterbacks all playing at the same time. But it makes the Titans better.
What's interesting is going to be like, obviously, I mean, there's so much hype around the Julio move last year that the Robert Woods is not going to get anywhere near as much hype as that. No. It's probably going to end up being light years better for the Titans, would be my guess.
Yeah, like if Robert Woods had a much better season than Julio Jones, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, what will he be early? I don't know. I mean, it may be that early on, based on the timeline, I would assume that he would be playing from week one. But, I mean, it is an ACL. You always have the possibility of an injury issue. If he doesn't have any, I'm sure he'll have a better season than Julio Jones did in 2021.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant, Joe Rex Rhodes Rant of the Week. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Rhodes here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take it to Bermuda.
And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's Rant of the Week. A little Kokomo bringing us back in. It's going to be a nice day today. 70. 72, 73 degrees out. This song a little bit more fitting. Warmer times are upon us, Joe Rex Road.
Just being on the beach, jamming that song. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
All day long, just put it on a loop,
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Speaking of the weather, I feel like I almost want to rant about how you hit a 330-yard drive.
I had a moonshot yesterday. I'm not typically one to talk about my golf game because nobody cares, but I did hit a 300-yard drive yesterday.
That's amazing. It was awesome. I've never come close to that. That's like
I don't really know how I did.
Either you either you retire on that, or you absolutely go all in, and you're buying yourself new like gloves and.
Well, I felt
nice
bad
because
I hit into somebody, but I was like, "Well, they're so far away. Like, I'm not gonna hit them." And then I did. It was not good. Anyway,
that's awesome though.
I'll be on the PGA Tour next week.
Well, look, I mean, at this point. You probably won't be. But if you keep working your butt off, why couldn't you be on the senior?
Well, that's right.
See, that's always the dream. Golf's great because you're like, you could start getting really good, like in your mid-30s and be like, if I really work hard, the senior tour is there for me.
Tiger, coming for you here in about 15 years, buddy.
There you go.
Joe Rexrod, your rant of the week. I'm interested to see what this one is.
So, Saturday in Indy, it's quite a weekend in Indy, getting to write a little bit about St. Peter's and Doug Eddard's awesome mustache and What, amazing. You know, Kentucky and Tennessee don't leave that building. Kentucky and Tennessee leave that building going home, and St. Peter's and Michigan move on. But Saturday was almost hard to watch, honestly, from Press Row, because I did see a team shrink in the moment. Yeah, I don't know if there was any particular missed shot that was like especially that, but as they started to pile up, you just kind of knew. And you've seen it in this tournament before. There's always different factors, but the Tennessee basketball team shrank in the moment. And it's a team that honestly, I mean, it really is one of the best groups of kids I've been around. And that's saying a lot. That is saying a lot. I've talked before about Michigan State, which, by the way, almost beat Duke yesterday. But, you know, some fantastic teams. And I think basketball teams, smaller teams, we've talked about this, it's a lot different than like a football team. You get, it's the same people over and over, and you get to know them a little bit better. And this team, Tennessee, I mean, it's one of several from this program that I'm going to remember when I'm done. Just as really enjoying. Like, they're fantastic kids. They like each other, their coaches. They should make Tennessee fans proud, but they shrank in the moment. Did they choke? Yeah, I mean, if that's what you want to call it. But I am a believer in trying to go a little deeper than that. And different job, you know, jobs are different within sports media, for sure. They just are. But I think we should all kind of understand the different mediums at work here. I think in any medium, it's there's nothing wrong with depth, right? There's nothing wrong with trying to understand things and having more information and more context. I think that's good in any medium. Not just saying fill in name sucks or fill in name is a choker, like some people like to do, including some Twitter trolls who have been muted. Now, I totally understand the impulse to bring up Rick Barnes' record this time. You can't ignore it. And I absolutely believe the dynamic of Rick Barnes and his record and the conversation around it and the relationships he has with his players actually had something to do with this loss. I believe that. I think from weekend to weekend, you see I think more than any other reason, if you really tapped into what they wanted to do, they wanted to win for him to shut people up. And that's great if you do it. But then when this happens, I have to look at that and say, ugh, I think that his record over that long period of time is now feeding on itself and making it harder. So, look, just because we're on Sports Talk Radio doesn't mean we should completely be against depth and nuance. Some things are black and white. I don't think this is. I think most things have gray, often multiple shades of gray, not necessarily 50 shades of gray, but quite a few shades of gray. So let's see if we can be smarter in Sports Talk Radio than throwing poop from your high chair at people. And that's the end of my rant.
I like it.
I like that one, Rex Road.
Thank you.
Nicely done. It is interesting. I mean, I got done. I was at Bridgestone Arena. So the Predator game it's just started as kind of the second half is winding down there with Tennessee and Michigan. And I'm sitting there watching this take place. And I think Ziegler missed an open shot. Josiah James missed one from the corner that I swear to you went halfway down and then popped halfway back out. Kennedy Chandler missed a three. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, I was like, and they're wide open, and they're just not hitting them. Like, what is going on here? I still thought, I mean, up until about 3 minutes left, I was like, yeah, they're about to lose. They're getting ready to lose this game. And I thought to myself, the conversation is about to go to Rick Barnes, and I get it. Like, I do. We talked about it here on the show. The March record sucks. It's not good. Like, it's got to be better in the NCAA tournament. But I walked away from that game, and I was just like, I mean, I don't really know what to do if I'm him. But the shots were there. You talked about Michigan's adjustment. They weren't letting him get inside. They were wide open threes. Wide open.
They were. I mean, honestly, most teams wouldn't have done what they did, except that Tennessee had missed. You know, like if Tennessee had hit like two or three more earlier, maybe he doesn't do that. But look, I give him credit. It was a gamble saying, you know what? These guys they're just having one of those nights from outside. Basically, let them shoot. Look at these guys' percentages. I mean, these are good shooters getting these shots too. You have to take those shots. They're letting you have those shots. So I understand the idea of, no, you got to go inside. I mean, you could have taken a couple dribbles in and made it a two-point shot and then had less value in the shot.
Yeah.
And actually made it a tougher shot because you're used to catching and shooting three. I mean,
can't play for Nate Oates if you do that.
Yeah, that's right. Nate Oates will cut you on the spot. They needed somebody to step up and just make that big play. I thought maybe Ziegler's steal for the layup to put him back ahead might be that play. But you got Eli Brooks making the run. With Josiah James is just like, that was on my side of the floor. So I'm kind of looking. I'm like, where is he going? And then I saw the ball just flip into the – and the look on Josiah James' face is just like, oh, my God. And it, like at that moment, I'm like, yep, they're done.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's the NCAA tournament. And it happens, and there are other teams that could have won this tournament, including Tennessee, including Kentucky, including Auburn, who are sitting at home right now. But the problem is Tennessee's coach has this just consistent issue. And another interesting thing on that is when he was at Texas, a lot of people blamed it on, like, maybe he's a little bit too hard on his players and stuff like that. He's a little bit too intense.
Yep.
And I actually think that he's adjusted that some at Tennessee. But I honestly, I don't necessarily buy that anyway. Again, I covered a coach who screams at players and refs and everybody more than anyone in the world. And he's one of the best NCAA tournament coaches ever.
He was laughing last night, Izzo.
Laughing?
Yeah.
Laughing at the refs. At, like, the calls?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when he's really
lose it.
Yeah. But I mean, there's an example of, like, you know, you couldn't be harder on everybody and you win. So I don't know what it is. Some of it, I'm sure some of these runs, it's just bad luck. I mean, Kevin Durant, you don't get to the – but that happens. There's great players. Kenny Chandler could have been, like, the most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
He probably never played for Tennessee again. And that's the killer for Tennessee. But it is. It is. There is a lot to this, and there's just not a simple answer. And it'd be a lot easier if Rick Barnes had done something from a coaching perspective, in-game perspective, that was like, there's why they lost, and he blows it. Rick Barnes blows it. I got nothing. I got nothing on that.
Well, now the question is, and different people are going to have different answers to this. I mean, there's a lot of talk about Rick Barnes right now. It's like, if you're a Tennessee fan, there's some that want him gone. There's some that say, this is what he is in the NCAA tournament, and you're never going to get past this point with Rick Barnes. And there are others that say, yeah, have you seen what Tennessee basketball is without Rick Barnes and recruiting and what that looks like? I kind of fall more on that side of it. Like, I like Tennessee basketball being in the mix as a Tennessee fan. But I do understand, like, if you have aspirations to win a national championship, you know, the Rick Barnes part of this right now in the tournament is a problem. I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, Tennessee ended up number two in defensive efficiency. And again, Michigan did some really good things. Michigan's tough. Yeah, 7-1 dude, and he's hitting three threes in a game. You know, they're tough. But Tennessee is losing Mike Schwartz, its defensive coordinator, who came up with all they do on defense, and they do so many different things, and they jump and harass people, and it's fun to watch. But he's out of there. So it is moving forward. I mean, Rick Barnes has got to find – an associate head coach, and he's got an all new staff now from what he had 3 years ago. He's not getting younger. He's losing Kenny Chandler. I do think that thinking about the future beyond Rick Barnes at some point is worth doing. And if he's going to stay here and keep having these really good teams, then maybe it can be like a succession plan kind of thing. But the idea of, like, firing him or something, I mean, that's just, there's no way that's happening. There's no way it should happen.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the big Titans moves over the weekend. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.